I'm pleased to have as our guest today Lawrence Block, one of the finest mystery writers working in the world today. And I'd like to just give Mr. Block a plug here. I see that he has recently won the Cartier Diamond Dagger Award for Lifetime Achievement, the third American to be so honored. And if you would, Larry, tell us a little bit about that award and how that was, when you received that, and how that was awarded.
That was a great treat. That's given by the Crime Writers Association, which is the UK Association of Crime Writers and the first such association in the world. And it came as a surprise to me. I was honored by the Mystery Writers of America a few years back with a similar Life Achievement Award, and that was a great honor, but it was one that I sort of figured to get sooner or later. For an American to be honored like this by the British is quite extraordinary. I didn't expect it, and I was not half chuffed, as they say.
Because you're referring to the Grand Masters that you won from the Edgars,
correct? That's right.
Yeah. I'd like to start off by talking about my favorite series that you've written, and one I think is one of the finest series being written in modern fiction, and that's the Matthew Scudder series. And in February, you have a new Matthew Scudder novel coming out, All the Flowers Are Dying.
Yes, and I know the title might mislead you. It's actually a much darker book than you might suspect from the title.
Now, you've taken a lot of risks with the Matthew Scudder series over the years. You've had Scudder has gone through a lot of permutations as a man. And one of the things you did at the time, which was relatively unheard of, was Scudder's love interest, Elaine. It was very rare at the time for a private eye or a man who was working independently to get married and to form a serious bonding relationship at the time. Was that a conscious effort at the time? Did you think about the impact on the series when you had Elaine and Matthew get married?
To tell you the truth, I never think about the impact on the series of that sort of decision. I just try and write the books the way I want them to be, and have the changes in Scudder's life be what seems right to me. And I figure the readers will either like it or not, and that's not my business. I know every once in a while I run into readers who look at me rather owlishly and say, "I liked Scudder better when he drank," you know. And as a matter of fact, in the fifth book of the series, 8 Million Ways to Die, of course, that's where Scudder comes face to face with his alcoholism, and at the end of it declares himself an alcoholic. And at the time I thought I may well have written myself out of a job by doing that, that the series would just not work anymore with him not drinking. And that turned out not to be the case. And similarly, I've allowed Scudder to age over the years. It's just seemed appropriate to me. The series operates on a certain level of realism that would be shattered for me, if not for anyone else, if Scudder just stayed, the same age over years and years. You know, the first book came out over a quarter of a century ago, and he's that much older than he is when he started out. And that was, most series don't work that way, and I can understand why. I have other series that don't work that way, for example, where the character is essentially frozen in time.
When you finished 8 Million Ways to Die, which is one of my personal favorites, and I think one of the finest crime novels written during the time, very powerful entity. I thought you did a very clever thing. In fact, I actually have a copy of the article that was in, or the story that was in Playboy called By the Dawn's Early Light. And if you would, for the craft of the writing, whenever Matt finally made that realization, he said, you know, my God, I am an alcoholic. It seemed that for a time there, you had to try to figure out how to get Matt back in the game if he wasn't going to be participating in his barroom pursuits. And that short story I thought was brilliant. And it seems like what you did, you kind of went back in time to a period where he was still drinking.
Right. At that point, I wasn't even concerned with how can I keep the series going. I was willing for it to be over. But I had promised to write a Matthew Scudder short story for someone who was putting together an anthology. And I thought, how could I do a short story? And I thought, well, I'll just do something that takes place earlier in time, something from his earlier career. And the story worked well. It won some awards, and it sold to Playboy, and it pleased a lot of people, and pleased me. And I found myself thinking about it, and a certain number of months later, I don't think it was a full year later, it struck me that there were ways to expand that story into a novel, and that ultimately became When the Sacred Gin Mill Closes, which is, for a lot of people, their favorite book of the series. It's probably, artists have a term called painterly to describe some illustrators and not others. And this is, similarly, this book is probably more novelistic than other books in the series.
Mm-hmm. Moving on from the Scudder series, the Bernie Rodenbaugh series was the series that you began, I believe it was back in, was it the late 70s or the early 80s?
It was around the same time that the Scudder series began, maybe a year or two later. It was the late 70s.
And it seemed that the Bernie Rodenbaugh series was popular and well received, but then it seems like, I don't know how many years ago, maybe 7, 8, 10 years ago, it seemed like the series really caught fire again, and that fans have an insatiable appetite now for Bernie Rodenbaugh.
Well, they always did, though there are more of them now than there were at the time. But what happened with Bernie is I wrote 5 books about him at the rate of about one a year, starting in maybe 77. And they were building an audience, they're not setting any sales records by any means. And then I got busy with other things, and 11 years went by between the 5th and the 6th book in the series. And that absence made a lot of hearts grow rather urgent in their fondness. And they, when I did finally return to the series, then it did leap forward in popularity. It was also more effectively published than the first 5 books had been.
Okay. Do the type of fan reactions you get from the people that like the Scudder series and like the Bernie Rodenbaugh series, I would imagine they're very, very different than the type of people that are attracted to the two different characters.
Well, I think probably a majority of my readers, as far as I can tell, do follow both series. But there are some who are just partial to one or the other. And I suspect there are differences between the archetypal Scudder fan and the archetypal Bernie Rodenbaugh fan. But I don't think they're different. I think they're internal differences.
Okay.
I don't think they show up. You know, men, women, it certainly divides evenly by by the gender of the readers. So I don't know what the denominator is there.
What about Hitman in the Keller series? Those that seems to have caught on very well now. And the first one I found very interesting because when you wrote the first series of those stories, were those written with the idea that it was going to be a novel area, or were those written as independent stories?
Well, when I wrote the first story about Keller, which was a story called Answers to Soldier, I never expected to write anything further about him. And it was certainly over a year, probably around 2 years, between the first story and when I returned to the subject of Keller. And what happened was that the character stayed in my mind. I should explain for people who don't know the series that Keller is an assassin for hire, a hitman, and an introspective and rather quirky guy. And I was thinking about Keller, and I thought, wouldn't it be interesting? I mean, Keller's the kind of lonely urban guy who might wind up in therapy. So I wrote a story called Keller's Therapy. And at the end of the story, the therapist is no longer alive, and the therapist's dog is now Keller's dog. And I thought, how the hell is a hitman going to have a dog? He's out of town all the time. He needs somebody to take care of it. So I wrote a story called Dogs Walk, Plants Watered, about the young woman he engages to walk the dog. And by then, by the time the third one was done, I realized I was writing a novel on the installment plan. So there were a total of 10 stories that comprised Hitman. All but the last of them were published independently as magazine stories. But they were written with the clear thought while I was writing them that they were chapters in a book. And consequently, when it was time to stitch them together, there was no trimming required. They were just ready to go.
Yeah.
The book that followed that, called Hit List, was written by design as a novel. Mm-hmm. Although a chapter or two of that was published independently, in one place or another.
Has there been film interest in either of those two books?
Well, there can't be in more than one at a time because of course the any film deal is going to preclude a competitive project. But yes, Hitman has been under option for quite a few years now. It's been in development for quite a few years. I wrote a screenplay for it, and the producer has a star attached to the project, and it is by no means moribund, but by the same token, it is not ready to start filming tomorrow either.
Right. Okay. I was thinking, as I was, when I knew that we were going to have a chance to talk, I think one of the things that I like about Keller is, I think there's a part of all of us that is kind of intrigued by the possibility of just getting on a plane and going someplace. And most people that he hits, that he is a hitman, they deserve it for some reason or other that they've done in their life. They've done it. And there's a moment when they realize who it is that they're face to face with. And it's kind of an interesting phenomena that it's almost kind of like when, as a reader, you read that and you're kind of like, I wonder what it would be like to get away with murder if you could do something like that.
Well, I think I'm not sure that I agree that most of the people he hits have it coming. That's something that's of no concern to Keller, I know. And sometimes there's no reason to infer that as a reader, unless that's what one would prefer to believe.
Right.
But what does indeed happen, I was at a signing in Marin County a couple of years ago when Hit List came out. And this one young woman said, she said, you know, she said, I I don't know if you realize it, but you're having a curious effect on people's morality. She said, I was reading Hit List. I was about halfway through it. And I set the book down for a moment and looked off into the middle distance. And I actually said, well, so he kills people. What's so bad about that? So I don't know that that's every reader's reaction, but I have a feeling this woman was not unique.
Yeah, yeah. There's a certain, I think for me, there's just a certain satisfaction of it's kind of like watching a Hitchcock movie or something and see if the character is going to get away with it. And you do a beautiful job of setting up the way that they are hit, because he doesn't want to know too much information about him, and he doesn't want to know too much about what went on. He's being hired to do a job, and he goes out and he performs his job, and then he comes back and he gets paid, and you know, and he kind of goes on. So it's not a big, it doesn't seem like he struggles a lot with it. It's more of a job that he has. What about the character Tanner? Is there anything going on new in Tanner's life?
No, and I rather doubt that there will be. I wrote 7 books about Evan Tanner in the late 60s, the seventh, and it came out in 1970, and then nothing for a long, long time. And I assumed I was done with the series. And then in 1998, a full 28 years after Me, Tanner, You, Jane, I published a book called Tanner on Ice, which, in addition to bringing Tanner back, also explained his absence. It turned out he'd been flash frozen by agents of the Swedish government and stuck in a food locker in Union City, New Jersey. It could happen to anyone. And that was, it was fun to do the book. It was fun to write the character again. But people ask when the next book will be, and I figure a 28-year interval between Tanner books is probably about right.
Probably about right.
Yeah, I think the man has the life cycle of the cicada, actually.
Now, you are, you're doing something a little different these days. You had mentioned to me you're doing something, I believe you said it was with ESPN.
I'm doing some TV writing right now. I hired on to do a series called Tilt, which is about, high stakes. It's a dramatic series, a 9-episode miniseries, I suppose you'd call it, with a background of high stakes poker in Las Vegas. And the two creators of the series are two friends of mine named Brian Koppelman and David Levine, who wrote Rounders, the really outstanding poker movie of a couple seasons back.
Yeah.
And they're running the show on this, and I'm one of three writers they've engaged to put the thing together and make it happen. And I've never done episodic TV before. I've never done anything like it. I've never done anything that requires working with other people, and I'm having an absolutely wonderful time.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
And the show debuts January 13th, I believe it is, on ESPN.
Okay.
And we're in for 9 episodes, and we're hoping that the world loves it and we get picked up.
Good. Do you know what night of the week this is going to be on, Larry?
It's going to be on Thursdays at 9 o'clock.
Okay, great. One thing I'd like to talk to you about a little bit is I've met people that like to travel before, but I don't think I've ever read anyone who travels to the extent that you do.
My wife and I are a little relentless about it. Yes, you could say that.
And I can remember at one time you had started a project where you were going to go to all the cities in the United States that had buffalo.
As part of their names. That's right. That's right. Well, we thought we could do that when we set out. But when we set out, we started off knowing of 20 places named Buffalo, towns or cities. And fairly early on, we expanded our list through research and realized that there were 40. And over time, of those 40, we've been to, I think, 81 or 2, and know of about 15 more. So it's quite clear to me that buffaloes are like subatomic particles, and the act of looking for them causes new ones to spring into existence. So we can't possibly get to all of them. No. And it's like Hercules and the tortoise. There's no way. It's one of those insoluble conundrums. Yeah.
Was it an interesting thing? I mean, were there any buffaloes that you ran into that were particularly noticeable, or were a lot of them just kind of small towns that were named Buffalo?
Well, here, this is a wonderful example of the journey being more important than the destination. We had a couple of years where we were living without a fixed address and just driving around the country. And the buffalo hunt gave one a reason to turn left rather than right at a crossing. You know, it was that sort of thing. And we found all of the places we visited quite charming. Some of them had no people, but some of them actually had a negative population balance because there was no one living there, but there was a graveyard. So that there were more dead people than living ones, and those particular ghost buffaloes, we call towns like that.
Yeah, maybe Keller had been there previously to your arrival.
Just the Grim Reaper.
Yeah. Have you ever thought of doing any kind of travel writing, or do you just enjoy the travel as just a part of your life, and the writing is what you do because you love to do it? The travel is just something completely different.
I frequently will process a trip while I'm on it by thinking in terms of writing an article about it when I'm done. But that, I think, is just a way for me to process the experience while it's happening. Because usually once the trip is over, so is any interest in writing about it. I have over the years written a batch of travel essays and things like that, several of which appeared in the New York Times travel section and some other places and that. But it's not something I have very much interest in doing.
Yeah. You wrote in a newsletter about a recent travel you took with a granddaughter.
We just got back a couple of months ago from a trip to South Africa. Yeah, my eldest granddaughter is 16, and for a couple of years now has been a great travel buddy of mine. And we went just down to South Africa on an Earthwatch expedition in aid of the South African penguin. So we were a couple of weeks down there aiding the penguins.
Good. When we talked prior to the interview, with the new Scudder that's coming out, there will be no advanced review copies. And you say this one's going to be a little darker and some changes, which I can't wait to read. What can we expect, you think, or do you, as time goes on now with Lawrence Block, you've had a lot of different series characters, you've done a lot of different types of writing. Is there anything, Larry, that you feel that you'd like to try that you haven't done yet?
Gee, I don't know, Casey. It's been a lot of years and a lot of books, and I don't have anything I've always wanted to do and haven't done. If there was anything I'd always wanted to do, I've long since done it.
Yeah.
I don't know that there will be any more Scudder novels after all the flowers are dying. I think that might be time to stop.
Okay.
There's probably could be more burglar books, but I don't know. I don't at the moment feel any compelling need to add to that body of work. Tanner, as I said, is going to have to wait until
another 28 years.
Well, some of those years have passed. Another 22 years, right? Keller, I think there'll be one more Keller book, if only because you can't have a two-book trilogy.
Yeah.
So I think there'll probably be a book, and it'll probably be called Hit Parade, and it'll probably be in the next couple of years, but I'm not certain. Aside from that, I don't know. About a year and a half ago, I had a book called Small Town, yeah, which is probably my personal favorite of my work, and it was quite different. It was a big multiple viewpoint novel. Thank you. And will something like that occur to me? Maybe, but maybe not. I don't know. I know I'm enjoying the TV writing. I know I hope we get a second season out of it.
Good.
I know I've been having a lot of talks lately with people about screenwriting for theatrical films. And I just had a meeting the other day with a prominent director who has something he wants me to do with him that I would very much like to do, and I think that might happen. So it wouldn't shock me if the next few years saw me doing more screenwriting and less in the way of books. But I've learned that the thing about the future is you don't know what it's going to hold.
One question I'd like to ask you, because he's been one of my favorite characters in the Scudder series, is Mick Ballou. And there's something about his character that has always intrigued me and always interested me. And the butcher's mass that he goes to on a regular basis seems to provide Scudder with a kind of a spiritual contact outside of the normal contact that he gets through his recovery programs and that kind of thing. And what was it about Mick Ballou when you really started developing him as a character that really drew you to him?
That sounds like a question I ought to be able to answer, and I don't know that I can. So much of the decisions I make as a writer are intuitive rather than intellectual. I rarely know why I do things. I can sometimes extrapolate an answer after the fact, but I don't know that it has anything to do with what happened.
Right. Might just be Case is just a character I particularly like.
Yeah,
and he's part of the
he works for a lot of people. I like the character as well, and he emerged first in a book called Out on the Cutting Edge, where he had a role to play, and I never thought he'd become a permanent member of the repertory company or anything like that. But by the end of the book, the relationship that he and Scudder had defined for themselves was sufficiently interesting so that I knew he'd be back. And he's been part of the series ever since.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you're excited about working with the other people on ESPN. And it's funny to me, this celebrity proco, how hot it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is just, it's funny, I have a lot of my friends, their kids are 22, 23, all the way up through 30s and everything, and it has turned into a very, very popular
who knew?
Event.
Yeah.
Who would have guessed?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, well, as you might imagine, there's a lot of card playing in every episode of the show, but it's also, there's a crime plot, and it's interesting.
Good.
I think it's good.
Good. Well, I'm glad to see that ESPN's taking a shot on doing some fiction and doing something along those lines, because I think it could be it's a natural outlet for him. Larry, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Appreciate the time.
The pleasure is mine.